Hi, this is Brian Doyle with the International Sports Federation and Global Serve, and you are listening to the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast with Steve Anderson and Matthew McKay.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to Youth Ministry Sherpas Podcast.
Helping youth workers to keep going. My name is Matthew McCabe.
And I'm Steve Anderson. And we are back with our first full-length episode in quite a long time.
Almost a month.
Yes.
So you're going to have to buckle up because you're in for a little more than 11 minutes today now that Sherpa Shorts are behind us.
I hope you have cleared your calendar for a whole 30 minutes of Youth Ministry Sherpa goodness.
Here we go. Let's go.
Hey, we want to give a shout out to our good buddy, Adam Russell. He's down in, is it Alabama?
I believe he's down in Alabama. He's our main man and our number one fan.
He is our number one fan. He is a patron of the show, which means he actually, for some unknown
beautiful, wonderful reason, has decided to support it. So having this episode is brought to you by
Adam Russell. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, Adam.
Appreciate that. If you want to be a patron, just go out to our website. You can find a link there to support the podcast, and that would be great.
We'd be super grateful.
We also want to give a little publicity for our Instagram account. If you're not following us on Instagram, you should check that out.
We're having a lot of fun with the old Instagram account.
We've got stuff that we publish every day. We've got the Youth Ministry Road Trip, where we highlight a youth worker from around the country, a different state each week, which has been really fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think Colorado or California.
Yeah, we're moving.
We're in the seas.
We like the alphabet. It's a weird thing.
So if you're a youth worker and you're in a state that follows, say, the seas, we want to hear from you. We'd love to highlight you.
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking for the rest of the state. So
send us an email on our info@sherpas.com email address, or hit us up on Facebook or Instagram.
Yep.
We'd love to make you the focal point of our road trip.
Absolutely. All right, so we are back with this episode, and today we're going to be talking about parenting.
Parenting, something both of us have some experience with.
We do indeed. So, Matthew, you have 4 kids.
I do.
Where are they in the teenage bracket right now?
Well, I have one that has just recently left the teenage bracket.
Okay.
I'm still cannot wrap my head around the fact that I have a child in their 20s. Feels very adult-like, and it just doesn't match how I see myself.
Yeah, I understand.
Yep. And then I have 3 teenagers. So okay. I have 2 in college, 2 in high school. Youngest is 15, actually just turned 16.
Wow.
Now that I think about it. See, 4 kids, it gets really confusing.
They say you lose 25% of your mind for each child, so you're now at zero balance.
I'm pretty much at zero balance. So yeah, my youngest just turned 16 and is getting her hours in, and we'll this fall get her license, and I'll have 4 weapons of mass destruction on the road.
Oh, buckle up is right. Wow.
Exactly.
Okay.
What about you, Steve?
Yeah, I have 3 sons, and just a month ago, my youngest left the teenage years. Which means for the first time in I don't know how long, I don't have a teenager.
A long time.
My oldest is 25, middle one's 23, and the youngest just turned 20.
So how exactly are you and your wife coping with that reality?
Oh, my goodness. It's emotional. It's emotional.
I can well
imagine. It's been our identity for so long. From the time that my oldest became a teenager and was part of the youth ministry, you know, through all those years, it's just, we were sitting home the other night, we were watching This Is Us.
Beautiful.
Which is killing us, right?
It's in the best way possible.
Yeah, the tears are flowing, and I'm looking up at all the pictures on the wall of the boys when they're younger, and I'm just like, do you remember that trip to Maine? Do you remember that trip to Colorado? Oh.
The tears. You got This Is Us and nostalgia.
Yes.
You guys were a mess that night.
We were a mess.
How many cartons of ice cream got down that night?
I think it was like 3 bottles of wine, probably.
No, that, either way.
Lots of tears are still soaked into the sofa cushions.
I bet. Yeah, we were, when my daughter was actually tidying the basement up to set up, she had a Sweet 16 party and invited a small army of people over. I think we ended up with 58 teenagers in our home that evening. But she was tidying up the basement and just ran across this box and brought it upstairs, and it was just full of these envelopes. We must have put these envelopes together for some project one time, and we started going through these envelopes, and it's just all these pictures of like when they were four, you know, they were toddlers, like the little soccer pictures, you know, them standing on a ball that they can't even walk and chew gum, but yet somehow we put them on a soccer field. And be, like within a half an hour, I was like in the fetal position in the corner, just singing, "Where is that little girl?" You know what I mean? I just was losing it.
Someone just reached in and grabbed your heart and ripped it right out. Started
pummeling it. Like, oh man.
Yeah. Well, good times. I loved being the father of teenagers.
I did too. I do. I still do.
Yeah. It was fun.
I love, I mean, again, I say that she invited, you know, 60 people into our home, but that was a blast. I loved seeing her friends. And again, it was different. You know, she had her youth group friends and she had her swim team friends and she had her school friends. And yet there they all were just in that pool of teenagerism, just existing and having a great time. And it's been an absolute blast.
Yeah, I miss the days when we would just hang out with the boys and their friends, and they'd be hanging out in the backyard shooting hoops and playing wiffle ball. And
Coaching
their teams and just following all their activities and talents and stuff. Oh, that was just so much fun. I really miss it.
Yeah, I really do. Now, there are parts of it that I bet you don't miss.
Well, yeah.
Because parenting a teenager is just straight up difficult.
It is.
It's hard.
There are choices that arise, decisions to make that you just don't see coming and don't know what to do with because you've never encountered them before.
Absolutely. I remember when they were little and it was, okay, we have to make a decision. There's the right decision and the wrong decision. When they get to be teenagers, it was so often like, here's two right decisions. Which one's better?
Yeah. Oh.
And just, it was so difficult.
Or here's two wrong decisions. Which one is less wrong?
Less wrong. That'll happen. Oh, your perspective changes a lot when you have teenagers.
It does.
How long did you do youth ministry before you were actually the parent of a teenager?
Let's see. Well, most of those years were as a volunteer. When my oldest became a teenager, I was 5 years into full-time as a youth pastor.
So
I was 15 years into youth ministry at five as a pastor.
Sure. And how do you think that your perspective changed?
Well,
when
I was younger, I used to think I knew a lot more than I really did. Absolutely. And it was easy to sit back and look at families and think, what are they thinking? What are they doing? But like I said, when you have those decisions to make in the moment and you just don't know
what to do,
it definitely gets more difficult.
Yeah, I can relate. I just did the math in my head. I did student ministry for 20 years before I had a teenager myself. It's hard to believe because so much of the last like 8 years
it's all consuming.
Have been consumed by me being the parent of a teenager and leading a student ministry. That to think I did it for 20 years. And yeah, now that I think back, I can remember watching parents and just, you know, internally rolling my eyes going like, how could you make that decision? Or how could you screw that up so bad? Or how could you let your kid make that decision? And then I was that parent who was making that decision or somehow my child was making those decisions. And yeah, boy, it just changes things
suddenly,
a lot.
It got a lot harder than it looked, didn't it?
Yeah, it got real in a hurry. And I think now I have a far greater respect for parents of teenagers just because I know firsthand it's not nearly as easy as I once thought it was. And then the decisions that have to be made, well, from a step removed or from outside the emotion of it, look like easy decisions. They're actually anything but easy. They're gut-wrenching, difficult decisions, especially because you know that you got a really high shot of getting it wrong, which I did often.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're a younger youth worker, it's easy to think that you have more answers than you really do. Not that we didn't have something good to say.
Oh, absolutely.
When we were younger.
There's a benefit to having a detached perspective.
Absolutely.
Which I think we're going to talk about in a little bit in this episode.
Yeah. But it does get more real.
Yep.
It does kind of hit you in the face when you're in the midst of it, how hard it can really be.
So you have a voice, and you should have a voice. And as a parent of teenagers, I need that voice in my life. I need a younger youth worker who's not in the thick of me trying to decide, should my kid play in that lacrosse game or should they go to that Bible study that they signed up and said they were going to go to?
Right.
I need somebody to kind of speak into my life because I see both sides of the commitment he made to the team and the importance of the Bible study. And so I need those perspectives, but I also need those people to understand that their perspective is somewhat limited.
Right.
And that they can tell me what they think, but at the end of the day, it's not their responsibility to make that. I was given the responsibility to make the decision. I have to make it, and then I want them to love me anyway.
Yeah, you learn a lot of grace when you have your own teenagers, that's
absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely. Which brings us to today's episode.
Yeah.
Today and next week's.
Yeah, and we're going to divide this into two parts. We are thinking through different parenting styles, maybe parenting...
Different kinds of parents that you encounter or see in your ministry.
They're... Lots of ways that people go about parenting, and there are stereotypes of that when they're taken to the extreme, we see problems with those.
Sure.
And they become difficult for youth ministry and youth pastors to deal with. So we're going to talk about some of those today.
Pretty confident that most of the kind of parents we talk about, you'll probably know. You'll assign a name to because they probably exist in your student ministry. And if they don't, they probably will in fairly short order.
And we've been those kinds of parents at times, too.
Chances
so
are.
We are judging them right now because we are also judging ourselves.
Yes, correct.
So the first kind of parent that we came up with is what we have called the over-invested parent.
This is a parent who sort of lives vicariously through their students' involvement in fill in the blank.
Yes. In our area, it tends to be sports a lot of times.
That's an easy one to kind of talk about because it's very easy for us as parents of teenagers, especially if we were involved in athletics. Like I was an athlete, well, at least some semblance of an athlete, back in high school, not a highly successful athlete.
You were a legend in your own mind.
In my own mind, in no one else's mind, in my own mind.
The older you get, the faster you used to run.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My times are dropping like crazy. But so it's easy to do that. But it's also, it's dangerous. And from the outside, it's almost uncomfortable to watch a parent be that invested in their child's success, whether it be in sports, it could be in band or drama or you name the thing they could be involved in, but they just get so invested that they can't see what's really in front of them.
If there was ever a place where the expression "there but for the grace of God go I," this is the place.
For you?
Yes,
really?
For me personally. Oh,
you
I
feel
just,
like you've been that over-invested parent?
Well, I just loved watching my kids play sports and got so deeply invested in their activities and the competition for playing time and all that stuff. The relationship with the coaches was often really strained for me. It was hard to sit there quietly and watch what I thought was, you know,
a
mistreatment.
Travesty.
Yeah,
sure.
Mistreatment of my kids. And sometimes it was just me being stupid. But I've navigated that. But
sure.
I think the other perspective is that some parents just are so over-invested in this that they lose track of anything spiritual going on in the life of the kids. They just think it's all about this activity,
sure,
the scholarship, the future. It's all dumped into this one basket that if they don't make that achievement, their life is going to fall apart.
Right. It's Maryland. It's lacrosse.
It's lacrosse.
So we've got to invest.
Yeah, I love baseball, and I don't like lacrosse because it takes people from baseball.
See, my son plays lacrosse.
He should be playing baseball, Matthew. It's a better sport. It's America's pastime. Come on.
I don't know. Anyway, he plays. He loves it. He has no aspirations to play. His ability level is adequate.
Okay.
You know, and he's having a great time. He's doing it because for the camaraderie. But he's around people.
It's a big thing around here, yeah.
That are thinking that this is their future. Is there a future in lacrosse?
There are Division I scholarships. I had a student who got a scholarship to Ohio State to play lacrosse, and he actually runs a lacrosse company now.
Okay, so there
that's
is
the only career path though, because there is no professional lacrosse. And even if there was, you still don't want your students to grow up without any spiritual depth because they spent all their time, money and energy on pursuing that sport.
So we have to think about how we can interact with those parents when we see it. You know, we have to think about what's our role as, again, someone detached. It's not our family. It's not our decision to make. How can we help them? And I think it's just helping to offer a perspective.
A little more objective
opinion. A little more objective opinion, mm-hmm. and to push them towards, I don't love this word, but it's the only word that fits here, towards balance.
Mm-hmm.
Towards saying, yeah, okay, you know, I'm not asking you to give up your dream of a lacrosse scholarship or of soccer or basketball or whatever, but what else is there with it? You know, are you sacrificing something? And again, from my perspective as a right. youth worker, it's, are you sacrificing some spiritual development?
Right.
At the cost of this dream over here, and are we out of balance? You know,
don't neglect the spiritual aspect of your child's development,
right?
Because that's going to, you're going to regret that later yeah. down the road yeah. when yeah. the kid gets an injury or the dreams don't work out, or even if they do work out, you still we want to help our students develop the character and the relationship with Jesus that they need yeah. for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, they're going to play 112 lacrosse games this year between club and high school. But probably have 50 opportunities to be involved in the student ministry. And every time there's a conflict between student ministry and lacrosse wins.
Yeah.
You know,
that's like, hard.
Every now and again, student ministry has to win if there's going right. to be some kind of balance there.
Help them trust God in that. Because if they trust God in that, their sports future or music or whatever is still going to work out. God's going to bless them if they're giving honor to him for,
absolutely.
You know, it's a hard balance to find.
But we have to offer that. It's yeah. to offer that advice, but we're treading on thin ice.
We're going to take it on the chin.
We could take it on the chin.
All right. The second type of parent that we want to talk about today is the over-involved parent, which is slightly different than the over-invested parent. So unpack that for us a little
bit. Well, the over-involved parent is the parent who's going to have to be... Just they have to know everything about everything and be involved in every decision that their child is making.
Mm.
There's no autonomy whatsoever.
No independence for the kid.
No independence for the kid.
Mm.
This is an easy thing to fall into,
mm-hmm.
but maybe not the best thing for the kid.
Absolutely. This is the helicopter parent, right?
Helicopter parent.
This is the one that...
Something like that.
Yeah, it's going to make it... They're going to restrict the maturity of their own child because of their over-involvement in everything that's happening in that kid's life.
Yep. You spend how many years of their life doing everything for them?
Right.
And then all of a sudden you have to start letting them do things right. for themselves. That's a very difficult transition as a parent. So I have some empathy for over-involved parents.
And it seems to be a tendency from what we've observed is the over-involved parents are often people that are really involved in the church.
Sure.
Because they're the ones that are serious about their kids' spiritual development and they're invested in the church and in God's people. So they're going to automatically take more concern over the youth ministry than maybe a lot of other parents would. So there's some positives
sure.
to that because they care about it.
Absolutely. Right? It comes from a good place.
It does.
In our role, a step removed as the youth leader, caring for this kid,
right.
not parenting this kid, we can sometimes see that it's stunting their growth.
And I think what happens is the over-involved parent sees everything that's happening in the youth ministry from the perspective of their child. And so they're navigating that and they're advocating for their kid and what their kid wants, what their kid thinks is cool. But they may not see the bigger picture. They may not see what the other types of kids are and the needs of other families. And therefore, they're kind of focused in a laser beam coming straight from the helicopter, hovering over their child.
Absolutely.
And it can be difficult as a youth pastor or a youth worker to deal with that.
Right, because this can manifest itself in many ways. I once counseled a mom who called me, and she was just distraught, just saying, I need to talk to you. And, okay, what's going on? Well, keep calling my daughter's college professors to talk about her grades and her class, and they won't return my calls, and I don't know what to do. And I was on the other end of the phone going like, what are you calling your daughter's college? She should be meeting with them, or it might manifest yeah. itself in like meeting with a coach. Like,
yeah.
I think my kid's not, you know, yeah. getting their just due, and so we're going to storm the castle and we're going to go meet with the coach. Have you ever met with the coach?
So let's not talk about that today.
Did I hit a touchy subject?
Man, it's hard. It's hard because absolutely. You do want to advocate for your kids.
I think for me, you know, watching so many people mm-hmm. over the years sort of be over-involved, kind of the helicopter that I think that my wife and I I think we default maybe too far the other way sometimes.
Did you?
You know, I think as I look back, there are probably some times where I defaulted to my kids to say, you got to work that out on your own. You got to go meet with your teacher. You got to go meet with your coach. If you've got an issue, you got to fix that.
Yeah.
And there were probably a few times in there. I think if I was going to err, that's the side I wanted to err on. But there were probably some times in there that maybe I needed to stand up. But
yeah.
But I think when it comes to student ministry, again, yeah, it's a positive thing. They're involved. They want the best for their kid. But we have the opportunity to see the bigger picture. What we're trying to do as a ministry, not just for that particular
right.
kid.
So I think we have a role to play in helping them to see that we're about all the kids in the ministry. We love your kid. Your kid's awesome. We're doing everything we can for them. It's a good reminder for us.
Mm-hmm.
It can be really annoying when you have a parent who's always coming to you saying, you should be doing this, and you should be doing this, and you should be doing this. And we're thinking about all the other things in our vision. But at the same time, you want parents who care. So,
yes. So
I would just, you know, as after fighting through some of those battles with different parents, I'm able to step back now and see there was some good in that. Even though it's frustrating and annoying, it's good to have people who deeply care about
yeah.
what we're doing and are invested in it.
Because we will talk about this here in a while. The opposite is also not healthy.
Yeah, it's not good either.
Absolutely.
So the over-involved parent, the one who's parenting out of a sense of control, we have to help them see that it's about more than just their kid. If
yep.
we can,
part
try
of
to
community.
Have, you know, sell the vision, the overall vision, and hope that they see that.
Absolutely. Well, a third.
Sounds really lame. Let's just tell them what we're doing and hope that they believe it. The truth is, this is never going to be easy. You're always going to have to wrestle with people who want to tell you how to do things because that's how they want it done for their kid.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough, but that's what we're in the game for.
What's the next one?
Third kind of parent we thought about is the overprotective parent.
Slightly different than the controlling parent.
Because this is someone who's parenting from a position of fear.
Yeah.
Yeah, where fear sort of dominates how they do it, and it, again, will show up in lots of different ways.
Yeah, this is a painful one. This might be the one that I have the most struggle with because, you know, in the youth ministry culture, you know all the things that are going on in youth culture, in the world, and we're trying to prepare students to make an impact on the world for Jesus, to
absolutely.
Be leaders, to be gospel-centered movers and shakers.
In the culture.
And when you have families, parents, who just want to protect their kid from everything and have them in their Christian bubble, it's counter to what we're trying to accomplish in youth ministry. So this can be a real struggle.
Absolutely. And again, this shows up in lots of ways of like, are you really going to take my kid to this place? Like, what if the bus breaks down? Where will they ever be alone? You know?
Yeah. I've had parents who have high school kids, 16 years old, who have yet to leave the kid home alone.
Mm, right.
What do you do with that?
Yeah. And this is a very difficult one. I think when I think about it in the context of our job as student ministry, I think it's a little more clear because I think we are called to have a voice in that parent's life, to trust, to give their child over to God and to say this retreat or this
yeah.
missions trip or whatever it is the thing that they're afraid of is going to be so vital in their growth mm-hmm. as a believer that we got to help mom and dad get over the fact that the bus might break down. Because will it break down? Probably. I mean, we're going on a retreat. Of course it's going to
yeah.
break down.
Yeah.
You know, but to push them past that. But when it comes to
it's
things
hard, though.
We invest, we see maybe outside of student ministry, boy, that's just, unless they invite that conversation, that's a tough conversation to start.
It is. I mean, I've tried to have that conversation a few times, and it really hasn't gone very well.
It wasn't well received.
No. And there's a difference between parenting to prepare your kid for life and parenting to protect your kid from life.
Mm-hmm.
And the first is what we're shooting for. The second doesn't work. But when the parents are so afraid of everything, it's, I don't know. I haven't figured it out. I'm going to be
yeah,
honest.
Yeah, this is a tough one because, again, the spiritual answer is when they come and talk to you about this, then you go to the prayer of Jesus in John 17, and, you know, you pray, don't take them out of the world, but protect them
yeah.
within the world. But that sometimes that doesn't just... That doesn't sell. It sounds too easy.
The thing is, youth ministry is a place where a student who's from a more protective family can come and participate and then kind of gently be challenged in that, whether it's by other kids from outside the church who are coming or the experiences that we put them in on a missions trip or being outside their comfort zone in a retreat. Like, that's a great place for a student like that to grow. But some families are so protective that they're even afraid of the youth ministry experience to the point where their kid doesn't participate. And I honestly don't know what to do with
Neither
that.
Neither do I. When I interviewed for the job here, I remember there was a panel of people, you know, there's parents, there was youth leaders, there were even students in there. And it was just question and answer with the guy who we might hire. And I remember, like, this was forever ago. I remember, like, it was yesterday, this mom raising their hand after I had talked about how important I thought it was to reach out, to get our kids to bring their friends, to reach out to kids who aren't going to church, to get them into our youth ministry. And I remember she said, well, but if we do that, what if the wrong kind of kid starts coming to the youth group?
Oh, man.
Well, and I literally had no idea what to say to that person. I kind of went back to an old Mike Iaconelli saying that said, wait, aren't we all the wrong kid?
You're so snarky.
I was totally being snarky at that point in time. I still got the job, so it worked out. But
where is she now?
I don't know. They're not at the church anymore.
They probably came to my church.
They might have.
That's probably the parent I'm thinking of.
Yeah, maybe so.
Oh my goodness.
So that's tough. This is one that I haven't quite wrestled to the ground too.
Yeah.
About how to help parents who seem to just be so dominated by fear that they sort of create this. Coming from a good place, they want to protect their kid. They want to love their kid. So it's not. There's no evil intent there, but it's just hard. Yeah. It's difficult. So
it makes me feel bad for the kids too, because I see what's happening to them. I see their future laid out before them and wonder how are they going to function in this world when they've never been outside the house.
So if there's anybody out there listening who has some insight into how to
please help us.
Jump on the Facebook group or the Facebook page and just start a conversation. Would love any insight on this matter, because I'm still 27 years later still wrestling this one to the ground.
Yeah, that brings us up to the last one, which is the undermanned parent. This is the parent who has no idea how to parent a teenager. We've all been this parent at some point, but
of course,
some are worse than others.
Yeah, absolutely. The person who just never was able to make the transition from raising an elementary school age child to having a middle schooler or a high schooler. And so the new things that face that student, that child, are just sort of beyond them. And so
this might be the parent who grew up in the overprotected family who just doesn't get what's going on in the world. So a little story for this part of the episode. A few years ago, we had this family come to our church, and parents were real conservative, lovely people, dear people, but they had teenage daughters. And the daughters were slightly on the rebellious side. Mm. They wanted to live their own life. They weren't buying the company line at home. And so they came to our youth ministry, one of the daughters, and she brought her boyfriend with her, which was a bad situation to begin with. And they snuck off, I guess, at the youth ministry and were making out somewhere, unbeknownst to me.
Classic.
Because I missed the boat on this one. So some of the students come in and they're like laughing. They're like, so-and-so, we saw them over there. It's so funny. They're over there making out. And then they noticed that this girl was leaning over, and she was wearing a thong, very small thong.
Mm, mm.
And so she was exposing
more of herself than she should have.
Yes. And the guys, these are like 10th grade boys now, right?
So they are dying.
They think it's the funniest thing they've ever seen. And so they kind of started to make fun of her a little bit. They're giving her a hard time, kind of behind her back. And she's like, I don't feel welcome here because people are making fun of me. And so her dad comes up to me later. He says, I just don't know what to do. My daughter says it feels like people are making fun of her here, and I just don't know how to help her. And he had no idea
what was going on.
He had no idea that she had snuck off with a boyfriend, no idea that that's what was happening with the boyfriend, no idea that his daughter was wearing a thong to youth group, no idea that she was just doing everything she could to
walk the other way,
to go the other way. And I felt helpless to help him, because he was so sweet, but he just didn't have a clue.
Right.
He just didn't have a clue.
Yeah, yeah. And that's hard, because you don't know where that's coming from. I think sometimes it's coming from a place where they actually just aren't paying attention and they don't have a clue. I think sometimes it's coming from a place of they don't want to know.
Yeah,
or they don't want to believe.
That may be part of
it. I remember there was a student that sort of was in a very rebellious place and did some things that weren't great. And I confronted that student on those. And That student got very angry with me, sent a friend of mine multiple texts with very colorful language about, you know, who I am and how I should stay out of this person's business, and that if I tell that person's parents what's been going on, you know, that her life's going to be over, and just...
I know the story.
It was rough, and I remember calling
the mom. I like the more colorful version.
Yeah,
better.
I know. I will save the airwaves that. But I remember calling the mom and saying, hey, this is what's going on.
Yeah.
And the mom saying, oh, well, I'll take care of it. And okay, great, thanks. That's kind of what I was going for here. And then about an hour later, the mom called back and said, yeah, you know, I talked to my daughter, and yeah.
She denied it all.
Nothing that you're saying happened, so I don't know what to do there. And I was just like, mom.
You need to listen.
The train is there. And so, of course, I was feeling in a little bit of an attacked place. So I got a little snarky, and I said, well, you should probably pull the records, your daughter's cell phone records for the last 4 hours, and just read through a text message.
Which is genius, and I didn't even know this was possible.
Yeah, of course. Everything goes
Jack
on
Jack Bauer, whatever.
Everything goes on record. And so about an hour later, I got a call back from the mom, who had then read the text messages, and she was...
Her eyes were opened.
Well, she was devastated. You know, and here, I was angry, right? I was angry at her being clueless,
right?
But her being clueless at that in that moment was coming from a place of she just didn't want to believe that that was happening with her kid. And it ended up, you know, over time, you know, it gave them an opportunity to kind of see what was really going on. And over time, that student has grown. They're back following Jesus and loving Jesus, and it's a good thing. But man, what a difficult thing to talk to a parent who was just 100% clueless as to what was going on.
And I just have to say, as someone who has parented teenagers, I'm sure I've been that parent. I know I have. I've almost intentionally, like you said, did not really want to know.
I guarantee I have.
And I'm sure I've missed things. And we've heard stories since our kids got older. Like, hey, we never told you this, but. That I didn't know at the time. I'm probably glad I didn't know at the time. So I have sympathy for that parent. I think that's maybe what we take from this is...
Absolutely.
It's hard, and not all parents are, I don't know, as wise about the ways of adolescent culture, maybe, as we are in youth ministry.
Sure.
And so we just need to give them a little bit of a break and have some compassion for them.
Yeah, absolutely. But also then have that voice. Help
try
them.
To help them. Yeah.
Try to help them.
Yeah.
Again,
hey, here's some resources maybe that would help you understand why your daughter's doing this.
Exactly. You know, as we talk through all four of these kind of parenting styles, again, all four I have probably been at some point in time.
Sure.
And if you're a younger youth worker, my guess is there'll be four parenting styles that you'll fall into at some point in time in your future.
Unless you're the perfect parent.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Not going to happen. But as we talk about that in the context of what our role is as a youth worker is in that.
Right.
And our role is to help them. I mean, one of the things I've learned, and I know you have over the years too, Steve, is that youth ministry is so much more than just being a part of the kid's life. It's about being a part of the parent's life. The parent has the kid for, it's just an absurd amount of hours more than we do. And so to have influence over parents is a huge part of student ministry. And so, we can be frustrated or even angry at the overinvested or the overinvolved or the overprotective or the undermanned parent. But at the end of the day, we have to get past that.
Right.
We can talk to our friends about it and tell funny stories and laugh and feel better about ourselves in that. But at the end of the day, we've got to kind of get back in the game because we have a voice in their lives. And it's an important voice, not only for them, but for their kids, our kids.
Yeah, and I think at the same time, we need to enter all of that with humility because we don't have it figured out. Even if we've finished parenting our kids, we don't have it figured out. And we certainly didn't have it figured out before we had kids, before we had teenagers. Thinking that we did was probably foolish sometimes. And so, there's a lot that we still have to learn in this. There's a lot that we have to really be patient with parents and families in. And at the same time, have the courage to speak what we know to be true when not given an opportunity. So.
Absolutely. So
Hard stuff.
Well, and we're not even done yet. We'll be back with part two of the Parent Chronicles with a few more parenting styles.
Yeah. Until then, we thank you for listening. If you want to go out to iTunes and give us a review, we'd love that. We are so thankful for all of you for supporting us and listening to this podcast. We hope it's helping you to keep going.
All right. We'll see you with episode number 14. Chirp is out.
Take care.